Hello, thank you for joining us for what should be a great game.
The fourth official couldn't allow him on because the fourth official never had a cheat.
Well, he overheated up the baby, did he? Unless he's breastfeeding, he should be all right.
Welcome along. It's another edition of the Football Family here on the 42 with me, Gavin Cooney. David Sned is here. Hey, David.
Morning, Gav. What's the crack?
Not much. Shane Keegan is here as well. Hey, Shane.
How are we getting on, mate?
Not bad at all. So this marathon four-game window for the Republic of Ireland ends with a 1-1 draw away to Ukraine. And it also ends with arguably the greatest goal scored by an Irish player since, we say, Saturday. David, was Nathan Collins' goal against Ukraine better than either Parrott's or Femi's on Saturday?
See, this is when people's preferences come in for what they like about a goal, isn't it? Like, you could have this debate about so many. Like, I wasn't covered in the game live, so I was watching it at home last night, and I would say maybe it was because I was at home, but my reaction was a lot more vocal. And I don't know which one is better. Like, you wouldn't mind scoring them all. Like, they're all decent. In terms of, I don't know, Collins, mate. But then Parrott is very, very good. Oh, with Emmys is very, very good.
Stop. It's no contest. Collins' goal is the best by a... Give me that solo run dancing through five or six players over let me pull back the leg here and let rip, and it might go into Rosehead or it might go into the top corner. I'm with the solo run goal every day of the week.
Well, that's your bias and your preference. That's what I'm saying. So everyone has their personally. If of all of them, I'd love to actually be the one who played the pass that Obafemi did. I'd love to be capable of doing that. But like, that's what I'm saying. Like, they're all just exceptional. You know?
Because like, I thought, like, say the Obafemi strike from long distance, like, that is so thrilling because it's a ball from the blue, it's out of nowhere. Like, you described really well in the last pod, David, you said something along the lines of, fucking hell, what just happened there? But as it turns out, the goals that you can see unfold in stages are actually probably better just because...
That's a good point.
Because I was lucky enough to be in the ground and I saw, you know, Shaparenko misplaces the pass. I think Collins anticipates the mistake before Shaparenko even makes it. But he sprints from so deep to read the ball and get in ahead of the striker to win the ball back in the first place. And you can, like, I just saw him taken off from inside his own half. And then he sets off and there's a couple of stages where he beats three men. And like, I have this sharp intake of breath and another one as it unfolds. And then the finish is very Luis Suarez type finish outside of the right foot. And I kind of felt it was a bit gratuitous, like there was no real need to an outside the foot finish, which made it so much better. Like, that was the perfect part. Yeah. So it's just,
in fact, it's a good point. I went to see the new Top Gun film during the week, and I was thinking that's going to be the most graceful, powerful thing I'm going to see going through the air. And then Nathan Collins, pops up. But like that, but no, that's actually a good point to make, Gavin. Here is when you almost see it unfold, and you say this is what could happen, and then it actually delivers on it. Like, it was brilliant.
It was like a four act play, Gav. So it was like with each different part of it. I'm starting by sitting back in the seat. Then I'm sitting forward. Then I'm up on my feet. Then I'm running around like a lunatic. Like, each different part of it was class.
And he also started the move and he finished, and not just by reading the pass, but even earlier where he has a little header knockdown, and he plays it back into Josh Cullen, who then set McLean away, and then was it McLean or Knight, and then that actually led to the goal. So even before that, at the very start, rather than maybe just clearing his lines, he's surrounded by, there's three different Ukrainian players around him, and he has a little glance and knockdown back into the midfield to get Ireland back on the ball as well. So his all-round performance was just exceptional. The only downside would be possibly early in the second half, when again he tries to read the ball in and he gets caught, and his name escapes me. The centre forward turns him. Yeah, but other than that, I don't think he made a mistake in the game.
Now, Shane, I want to warn you and David and the rest of our listeners against, because I think the revisionism will come, unfortunately, from certain begrudgers, that there's a little bit of luck involved in Collins' goal, in the sense that he got a somewhat fortunate ricochet off his left knee to set the ball up for the finish in the penalty area. But I'm telling you, Shane, that's bollocks. I think that's exactly what he meant to do. And I'll hear no talk of Nathan Collins getting lucky there. It's not much of a question.
You said it was a Suarez finish. Is that not a Suarez special move? That one where he used to use his knee to ricochet it out into the path for himself. Look, anybody who tries to take any glory away from that goal will be ultimate case of sour grapes. It's just a joy to behold. I just can't believe that after 40 years of following an Irish team, we've witnessed their two greatest goals in the space of three days apart. It's just an incredible time to be an Ireland fan and just to enjoy it and go with it.
Yeah, this is Chris, what we were saying a week ago after losing back to back games, but things have turned.
In terms of the sour grapes, my instant reaction was to it in terms of the type of goal it was, but I suppose if we are putting these goals in the pantheon, let's be honest, still Ronnie Whelan's goal, in Euro 88, that wasn't bad. But then if you're having sour grapes there, that was a shinner. Do you know what I mean? But that was an exceptional goal. It really was an exceptional goal. Obviously, Kevin Sheedy's goal against England. If we saw an Ireland player score a goal like that, cutting across the way he did, that'd be, and then Ray Helton against Italy in Giant Stadium.
Yeah.
That was.
And Wes's goal, sorry listener, we will get to the topic in a moment, but I do feel Wes's goal against Sweden is a little bit underrated and maybe the best goal we've ever scored at a tournament. Just not in terms of importance, but just in terms of quality.
Yeah, no, you're right, it was. No, it's not in, as you say, it's not in the same category as either the two we've seen this week. But yeah, in terms of a top goal at a quality tournament, yeah, I'd probably agree with you on that one, all right, yeah. Aren't we lucky considering we were due to do one of these after each of the four games? Aren't we lucky that we're not in that cohort of people who would have come on after game two and said, this is the worst Ireland team of all time and Stephen Kenny has to go? We'd have some retractions going on live on the podcast now.
Here he is. Why are we 5 minutes in and you're taking another victory lap for yourself?
But it was interesting. I don't know if you would have seen any of the stuff come true, Gav, considering you were at the game, but even what Shea Given was talking about on RTE, just saying that watching an Ireland, and it was it's a point I referenced it as well. Ireland finished the game stronger. Even Given making the point and Kevin Doyle beside him, more so I think the fact when Given was saying that it wasn't just playing against a side who are better than you and hoping to get something out of it and backs against the wall, who was being on the front foot, obviously, I think it was obviously a big thing as well. I'll be honest, when Ukraine scored, I was thinking, oh shit, this could be a bit of a collapse here, maybe. They might just overrun us here, and this could, because that's what I was kind of expecting as well, considering the nature of how the teams, not the team was thrown together, because there was only three changes, but they were all in, pretty much the defence, weren't they, and coming in, but even for Lenihan as well, just, Again, even with Collins, it just shows you the benefit of playing regular football. You can last the course, and even listening to Darragh O'Shea's interview after talking about being quite emotional in terms of getting back to his best and feeling confident in himself about where he was beforehand, because he hadn't been there. He said it was an emotional game for him in that sense, so it could be a big turning point for him too.
Let's listen to what Stephen Kenny had to say after the game at the post-match press conference.
Ukraine are a quality team, there's no question about that. They've got a lot of really exceptional technical footballers. I've enjoyed watching them in preparation for the games. But overall, we're leaving the stadium disappointed that we haven't won the game. Taking the lead, particularly, I think that was the key thing. I think I'd have to see the goal again, or the goal we conceded. We seem to be wide open. And it looks like a goal that we could have prevented. So I'm a little bit frustrated because I felt after that, although Ukraine had some penetration on the left side, particularly with Mudrić, who's very quick and did underlaps there, they got into them left wing positions, frequently, but there's no clear-cut chances from it. We defended our box quite well and we had a lot of opportunities in possession ourselves in the final third, and a fair degree of penetration, but we just couldn't get that the winner that we wanted, that we desired. I can't fault the players. They were really excellent in terms of their attitude was brilliant, and I can't really fault the players. They were tremendous.
So, I mean, Stephen Kenny saying there that he's disappointed not to win. Was it a game that Ireland deserved to win, Shane?
The XG, Gav, would say, the XG would say that that was the most appropriate result you could ever possibly have. The XG was Ukraine 0.98, which effectively is 1. And the Republic of Ireland was 1.06, which is effectively 1. Whereas in all of the other games, there's been a little bit, slight anomalies in terms of what the actual score versus what the XG has said. This one was bang on. Bang on. But as if I was the Irish manager, I think I could make a decent claim as to why I did properly believe that we should have won the game. I think if you're the Ukraine manager, you could probably attempt to make the same argument. It was that kind of a game where you're going to see it through the prism of your own team. So I don't think Stephen is, you know, I don't think Stephen is being, you know, I don't think he's egging it up too much there. I think he sees, you do, I've watched back games where I've done a press conference straight after the game. I've said, how the hell have we not won that game? Did you know, we missed that chance. And then you go and you do your proper analysis after the game and you watch the game back and you remember the chance that they had and how the hell did they miss that? And you realize, actually, you know what, a draw was probably a fair enough result there. I think it was one of those kind of statements from Stephen.
What was the XG on Collins' goal? Because I'd be curious, like, does the XG kick in from the point of which he actually, where he takes the shot? Is that in itself then not a bit of...
Yeah, I knew you. I knew. Would you believe that actually, when I looked at it, I said, if I throw out the XG now, I bet you David's Nate is going to put... Honestly, I knew you were going to ask about the Nathan Collins one. No, you're right. It only kicks in from the time where he takes the shot. Right. So Nathan Collins's goal had the highest XG for us of the night of 0.36, which means it goes in 1 in 3 times. But yeah, like that is, you know, there's no doubt there is kind of, there is certain anomalies and question marks over how XG is calculated. All right.
There, Ukraine's goal must have had a whopper XG because it was at the back post from a yard out. So
yeah, I thought it would be even higher. It was 0.5. So I'd love to know who the half the people who managed to miss that opportunity have been in the hundreds of thousand games that they've previously analysed. Yeah.
Yeah. So what Kenny was talking about the goal there, and he fairness, he hadn't really analysed and watched it back yet. He did say that, you know, that looked like a goal that we shouldn't have conceded, that it was wide open the back. What happened? Like, what went wrong there?
Yeah, I think it's a combination of the two, isn't it? It's a combination of James McLean. I was going to say gambling, but you can't even really excuse him by saying gambling because we weren't in proper possession. It wasn't even a 50-50 phase. Like, they had the ball, so I'm not sure. Like, as soon as they properly established possession of the ball, he should have got back goal side. So he should. Now, look, at the same time, their player has kind of, again, the phrase used in football terms, I suppose, is cheated, where you don't, you know, should he have attempted to get the other side of James McLean? Not really, though, when they had the ball. Not really. I know, like, I praised James on the last one. Said that I thought he was a good bit ahead of Enda Stevens now in the pecking order. To me, he got caught badly for that goal last night, and I think he'll have to hold his hand up and admit that he got caught badly for that goal last night.
Any standout performance to you, David, apart from the most obvious in Nathan Collins?
I think it's already been flagged, but I thought Josh Cullen was excellent again, to be honest. Just, I think he's almost deceptive in terms of the amount of ground he does cover and how he does get it, put himself about. Like, he doesn't do it in a kind of almost bombastic way. He just does it effectively. He just reads and anticipates and kind of knows where stuff is going to be and where he has to be. And he doesn't have to burst the gut to get to certain places because he's maybe, like Nathan Collins, he can kind of read it and get himself into the right positions. Under pressure, I thought he was brilliant. It was a moment in the second half where he was surrounded by about 3 or 4 fellas and I thought he was going to end up on the deck, and he kind of does a little... kind of pirouette almost, and then just gets the ball back to Alan Brown, I think it was. But it's one of those situations where ordinarily you would just expect an Ireland player, or a lot of players, not even an Ireland player, maybe to just try and clear the lines and give up possession. And I think it was at a time as well when Ukraine were maybe putting on a bit of pressure. But I just thought obviously Kenny made the start. I think you mentioned it earlier as well, it was the 60th start of the season. Like, he's literally played. He came off against Scotland, didn't he? He stayed on, didn't he?
He came off the last 15 minutes or so in Armenia. Yeah. Played every other minute otherwise.
Yeah, which at that point of the season is just speaks volumes. Just speaks volumes for him. And and the engine that he has. But yeah, no, I just thought he was really, really good. And there was times as well, like there was little times that, like, in terms of stuff, if you're looking at little things in games that you say, do you know what, that bodes well. Like there was times where Troy Parra had an awful lot of maturity in his play with just getting the ball and getting a couple of free kicks and just holding up a little bit. Now there was times where he was pretty poor as well, but obviously the header and a couple of others. But no, Cullen, I think, even O'Shea, was it like Lennon coming in, barely about, was it, he had one training session, two training sessions maybe, like, just, oh no, he hadn't, sorry, that was his first game, but like, I just, I don't know,
it was
just,
it was his first game for Ireland since the 0-0 draw against Northern Ireland in 2018 that we've all memory hold, as truly, truly one of the most appalling events I've ever been at.
Jesus. What were you, Gab, though? Who for you?
Cullen as well, I think. I thought he was brilliant. I thought he was so good. But seriously combative, like. You know, for, he's very, very small, but he really put himself about. Like, it was Malinovsky had to go, like, Malinovsky went into a 50-50 with him. Like, and had to go off injured. You know, it was just, like, just really
to
impressive.
To me, like, again, maybe some might argue getting slightly carried. I would argue that he's the best centre midfielder we've had since Keane. I can't think of a better midfielder we've had since Keane. I really, really can't. I think he's a superb player. I absolutely trust him with my life on the ball. He, as you say, he's for a guy who you's probably, you look at being in possession of the ball has been his main strength. He is absolutely not afraid of a tackle whatsoever, and I just think where the playing style, I'm not saying the playing style is the same as Roy Keane's, but I think there are similarities with Keane in that a bad day at the office for Cullen is 7.5 out of 10. I don't think he does anything worse than a 7.5 out of 10. I think on a good day he's a 9 out of 10, a bad day he's a 7 out of 10. I think his range of performance only ever kind of seems to go between those two values, his consistency, and to do what he's done, to play that amount of minutes in 10 days is remarkable going. It really, really is. I just, he's my favourite player in the Irish team at the moment, without a doubt.
You've bombed out Colin Robinson? Don't believe it.
Callum Robinson to me was, as you said, aside from Bazuna, I think, Callum Robinson was our best player last year. Was he playing above his level? Yeah, he probably was. I'm not saying he's as good as what he showed. I just think we shouldn't have the goldfish memory of forgetting how good he was for us very, very quickly. I saw you with somebody row in behind you in the argument there, Gav, on Twitter anyway, so he did. And more goals than Troy Parrott. How quickly we forget that Callum Robinson scored 5 goals in 2 games for us, you know? But look, it's been, you know, I think we're going to come on to our positives and negatives. Poor old Callum has definitely, you know, he's one of the players that hasn't had a great few days, really, so he hasn't. But I do think he'll bounce back again. I do now. I think he needs to get regular football. That's a no-brainer, but I do think he'll bounce back again.
Was my finest hour, my predicted team for this game that I put the 42 the morning of the match. I thought that there'd be a lot more rotation, especially in midfield, than there was, but he did keep faith with Knight, Malumbi and Cullen. Shane, on reflection, did he get that starting team right? What were the mistakes made there, if any?
No, I think he got it bang on. I don't know how fit Ogbene was. I would probably like to have seen Ogbene start ahead of Hogan. Aside from that, he's got it pretty right, I think, all right. Just the energy again that the midfield three managed to bring to it. It's the power of youth. Wouldn't you just love to be their age again, wouldn't you? Because they were a joy even from early on. Like, they just, the constant snapping at people and being around them and putting them under pressure. And, you know, Duffer always used it. Duffer, I remember Duffer when he came in. I think the first time I heard the phrase ratting was when Damien Duff delivered on our CPD course in Carlow IT on the FAI coaches course. Duff kept using the phrase ratting, you know, rat after him. And I love a fella who gets rats around the place, this kind of phrase. It kept coming to my mind last night, particularly looking at both of them, Knight and Malumbi, but probably particularly Malumbi. I'd say he's a pest to play against, an absolute pest to play against.
So ratting sounds like, you know, a type of pressing. But, you know, a type pressing in which you maximize how much of a prick you are to the person you're pressing. Is that a fair
it's definition? It's the Irish version of gender pressing, or however you pronounce it.
I think Gavin's definition is the official Collins dictionary definition on the ball there, yeah.
Stephen Kenny has often been criticised, David, for his in-game management. I've definitely criticised it. I'm sure we've talked about it in this podcast before. Felt he got most of his subs right in this game. Like, Harrigan and Hendrick came on, and at a time when, I don't know, it felt to me like Ireland were beginning to get overwhelmed in midfield, but he got a bit more control back there.
Yeah, absolutely. You only have to look at how the game finished. I know, obviously, Mudrick had that one run where he kind of got forward, and then similar to Collins, actually got into the box, but then wasn't able to actually have a bit of final product. But other than that, like, there was one ball across the box into the 6-yard box from Ukraine, that there was no one at the back post, kind of the opposite side to where the goal came from. But other than that, Ireland finished strongest, you know. And like, there was a couple of moments, like Hourahan, where he had a shot from distance, but you're kind of expecting to hit the target because he was like pretty much free. It was central. There was no pressure on the ball. It was kind of, it felt like, and he probably could have done a bit better. And then obviously that chance right near the end where it's played into Hendrick's feet and he tries to lay it off as well. And I don't think it was a penalty at all, so, and it wasn't given. But yeah, I thought it's pretty much like a template we're talking about as well, even with the midfield. Like, it's one of the things that Kenny has looked at too, in terms of, well, seeing what players are capable of playing games in quick succession. Now, obviously, the younger players, you would imagine, would be able to do that. But it's not always the case, because sometimes you can use up a different kind of energy in that kind of game, and that can drain them as well, like mentally or whatever. But like, I don't think it's a coincidence that the likes of, even though it's at the end of the season, the likes of Malumbi, who's now playing regularly, Knight, who, I don't think he was in and out of the team at Derby towards the end a little bit. He kind of didn't play, but he was still getting regular minutes, you know what I mean? Like, he was still playing quite regularly. And obviously Cullen, who, as Shane pointed out, he's just like, he's the linchpin of that team, the midfield, you know. But then, yeah, the timings of it, because it's a good point, that you could always begin to think, would Ukraine now put a bit of pressure on and finish his game strong? Because you kind of would expect that with the team who are better, to be able to finish a bit stronger, have a bit more options off the bench. But I thought the timings of the subs and the nature of them were pretty much spot on, really.
You've been saying that at the time though, David, or are you saying that in hindsight? Like, the only reason I say it is my gut reaction when the double change was made was, oh no, like I did sit there and
my initial reaction was, right, they're going to drop a bit deeper here now and they're going to just invite pressure on. And but that's not what happened, do you know what I mean? Like, if that's what would have happened and a goal had come, well then yeah. And but even if I had a still finish 1-0 or 1-1 and Ireland scraped that 1-1 and kind of are hanging on, then you could say, well, do you know what, those subs weren't right, because I hadn't got to that stage in the game where you're thinking Ireland were hanging on. But that's not what happened. Actually, it's not that Ireland created loads after that, really, but they still carried the threat on the break. And maybe that was partly because Ukraine maybe opened up a bit more and were trying to force things and weren't capable of doing it.
Yeah. Like, I don't know if Gav, you probably obviously didn't hear, but say Kenny Cunningham's live commentary at the time, he had just made the point as Knight was coming off. Was it Knight or Malumbi? Which one of them? One or the other.
Both came off, wasn't it?
Yeah, but he made the point on one of them. I'm trying to think which one of them it was. He said, well, he's certainly not been substituted because of a
drop. Oh, Knight. That was Knight,
certainly,
yeah.
Certainly not,
yeah,
been substituted because of a drop in his energy levels. He says he's just made a brilliant burst to close down a player in the last phase of play. And that's exactly where I was as well. I thought they both looked far from empty.
I'm not sure. I thought Malumbi was fairly gassed. Like, there was one point where just before he got taken off, he got dispossessed from behind, maybe 15 yards outside the Irish box, and he didn't really react. He looked absolutely exhausted when he lost the ball. His shoulders slumped. He looked to the ground. He didn't move for a few seconds, which obviously he's tired. But you can't get away with that at that level, you know. So I thought it was the right decision to take him off.
Well, by the end of the game, there's no doubt it was the right decision. I thought both lads came on and did very, very well. So they did. But again, you know, the point I tried to bring up the other day, I just think this change in shape suits so many players. I think it suits so many players. I think both of those players are going to be more comfortable, Hendrick and Knight, when they do see game time within, Hendrick and Horan, when they do see game time within that formation as well. I think it's, you know, and I think it's real, again, bravery by Stephen that, you know, you've lost two games, you know, two what people see by and large as poor performances, even though, as we said, we don't think they were as bad as people were making out. And the whole world is clamouring for you to ditch your three centre halves. And instead of that, you do make a change. You do change the shape. You do change the tactics. But it's not the one that everybody is calling for. You don't just revert to a back four, which is probably the most simplistic thing, or certainly the thing that people were calling for. He's found a different way of changing it up, and it's worked very, very well.
This is kind of why, in fairness, why I do admire him quite a lot, because it's just that boldness and that positivity. Like, he did, like, I mean, the big change is the one that you just identified there. It was, we changed the system. How do we do it? He brought in another striker, like, pick an out-and-out striker. And then the Collins goal is really, really kind of sums up what's different about the team under him. Because we hear a lot about this, and there's some kind of, sometimes, like, it sounds like PR, the amount of passing and how we want to dominate the ball. But they don't do that. They mix it up and they're more effective on the counter-attack. But what they the most significant change between the team now and how it used to be is just that aggression, that positivity, that they want to take a risk. They want to take a risk to win a game rather than take no risks and accept a draw, effectively. That's the big difference. I think Collins pressing up, sprinting halfway into the Ukraine half on a transition to win the ball kind of sums that up pretty nicely, I think. I think that's what...
When you say about you know, supposedly he wanting to dominate possession, I mean, we'd only just barely over a little more than a third of the ball last night. We had 38% possession last night. So, you know, I think he has evolved and developed as a manager at this level as well, in that, you know, I don't think he will ever not want to have the ball, but I think he's now a hell of a lot more comfortable with the idea of not having it for long periods.
Yeah. I should do some reporting, by the way. I did. So we were in the same team. We're in the same hotel as the Ukraine team, and I did spot one of their players in the lobby of the hotel the night before the game, getting a McDonald's delivery to the door, which I quite liked. I also spoke to Caoimhín Kelleher in the mix zone. Let's take a listen.
Your assessment of that?
Yeah, I think it was a decent result for us. Obviously, Ukraine are a very good team, and coming over here is not easy. So no, it's a decent result, I think.
Did you know that Nathan had that in him?
Probably not, but no, he's been unreal these last two games, and he's topped it off tonight with some goal likes, and he's unreal.
And for you on a personal level to play every minute all four games must be pretty good.
Yeah, no,
to
brilliant.
Take a claim for the
it's future. Good experience for me. Playing four games, like I say, in quick succession as well is nice for me, so no, it was good experience for me, and hopefully I can build on it. Mm.
Two important saves in the first half. The result could have gone the other way if you hadn't got in there. What were you feeling, what were you thinking at the time when they were
obviously just in box? I think they're on top of that stage, I think it was quite early on, so no, I was just happy to make the saves, and then obviously Nathan got the goal, so gives a good thing to build on, and just unfortunate we couldn't at least stay 1-0 for maybe 15 minutes into the second half, and then it might change, but I think we're just unlucky to concede early on in the second, which kind of killed us, really.
Did you feel a lot of pressure from them because they were coming at you? They really wanted to win.
Yeah, no, absolutely. They're a great side, I think, especially on the ball. They're not easy to defend against. So, yeah, it was. I think we dealt quite well with the pressure, to be fair. I think the back line defended the box brilliantly, and I think, for the most part, they didn't have many chances in the second half, really.
I saw a lot of the Ireland players at the game kind of had their heads in their hands, you know, like they were disappointed with the results. I mean, how did you feel about it at that moment, and how do you feel about how it's gone before the games generally?
Yeah, I think we were disappointed at the end not to get the win. I think, especially when you're 1-0 up, you always probably be disappointed that you've not won. But I think the last two games especially have been quite an improvement on the first two performances. But I think I've shown that, you know, this is a great squad we have here, and hopefully we can use these two performances now to get two big results in September, and then hopefully see where we are in the group then.
What was the internal message after the first two games?
Yeah, I think it was just disappointment about the first two games. I think, to be fair, we were quite happy with how the two second games have gone in terms of performance and results as well. So Just a shame about the first two games. But hopefully, like I say, in September we can get two good results there and then see where we are.
Just a case of keeping faith in what you're doing and it will come good, or?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the performances the last two games especially have shown that you know, we've quality players here, and when we do put it together and play the right way, that we can get good results and we can go up against anyone. Right,
so four back-to-back games, or four games in a row, should I say, for Caoimhín Kelleher. David, when Bazunu is fit and Kelleher is fit, is Bazunu still first choice? Has it changed?
No, I think Bazunu is still the first choice. Again, it goes off how, well, the next game is going to be in September, aren't they? Scotland. I actually booked my trip to Glasgow. I was going to stay in the Ibrox guest house because it was €110, but I thought better of it, to be honest. Save me. No, I think it depends how the season starts and what happens. If Kelleher, like, it'd be interesting to see. Like, it looks as if Bazunu will. Well, say it looks as if, I think maybe it could be done, but there seems to have gone a bit of radio silence on what's happening at Southampton, where last week it looked as if it was going to be happening before the weekend, you know, or over the weekend. But if that move happens and he's playing regular football and Kelleher's not, and Kelleher's still number two at Liverpool, I just think Bazunu comes back in. Like, Kelleher has been really impressive. Like, he made, I think, one, that save, the long distance save was great, but the save from Milenko, the one where he took unbelievable control on his chest and saved it, cut it down, like, that was, I thought that was a good save. But I just still think Bazunu, I just think as well, Bazunu, I kind of think he's still a better goalkeeper as well. But I don't know, it's a strange, and I don't know, sometimes, can you have a good problem as a manager? Because at the same time, you still need to manage the situation, right, in terms of who is the number one. It is a tricky situation to be in, but I think it still does come down to, well, who's playing regularly. By the time the game comes around in September, if Bazunu is playing regular football, and if it's at the top level, well then, I don't think there's a question if he comes back in. Because it's not even as if he'd be coming back in and there'd be people doubting the situation. Might be players, and there might be people thinking, oh, that's harsh maybe a little bit, but it's not as if they're saying, oh, that's a serious drop off there. That's a risk, do you know what I mean?
Yeah. It's never going to be a problem for Ireland if they have too many quality players, you know? And I think it's actually, Gareth Southgate's had the problem if he's had too many good players. Now, he's working with a far greater squad than Ireland, obviously. But in fairness to Kenny, he seems, I don't know, maybe it's because they've been forced to change the team so often. I think he's done a good job of not only developing squad depth, but giving players lots of minutes and just managing that squad in its entirety, because he's used so many players. I think it might be 12 or I think Lenehan might be, Neil O'Riordan did up the stats. I think Lenehan was something like the 13th competitive debutant under Kenny, which is fairly remarkable. Shane, where are you on the goalkeeper question? Have you moved?
No. It'd be Bazunu for me as well, Gav. I just, as you say, look, he was outstanding for us last season, and I think Kelleher could have kind of done, no matter what he did, I would have probably argued that was Bazunu. I think he's done well. He definitely made one really, really top notch save, as David says, last night. Again, I think his distribution could have been a bit better last night. Went kind of aimlessly long on four or five occasions. I think it was kind of tried to ping diagonals out once or twice there. There was one out to James McLean's side, I think, where there's nothing really James McLean can do other than kind of just head it out of play. But he is a super goalkeeper, and it is a really, really super problem for us to have. And I suppose the age bracket of the two of them kind of, you know, that goes right throughout the team. I think you take Scott Hogan out of the equation and replace him with Benny or Obafemi, and what would the average age of that team have been last night? You know, it was brilliant to see so many of those young players. I remember being at I remember tweeting about it at the time. I remember being at a 21s game when Stephen had recently enough taken over up in Tala. And he did a really strange thing that night where as Malumbi was coming off the field, he genuinely didn't seem happy with the level of applause Malumbi was getting. He felt Malumbi had been fantastic in the game, which he had. And he literally turned around to us. I was kind of sitting in the area behind him. He turned around to the crowd and said to everybody, like, shouted, "What about that for a performance, everybody? Come on." And literally acted like as a hype man almost. And everybody kind of clapped louder and cheered harder. And, you know, you see players like Malumbi kind of following him through now from the 21s and so many more. And, you know, it's like coming of age is too strong. Look, we did only draw the game, and, you know, as I say, a draw probably was a fair result. But I do think over the course of the four, like, to me, last night was possibly more impressive than the Scotland performance, all things considered. With such a young side out, like, it's such a positive sign. Again, without, you know, I'm not getting carried away, absolutely not getting carried away, because, you know, a draw is a draw and all that, but there was just a hell of a lot of positivity from it.
I think the manner of the fact of the of how it's finished after how it started just tells a lot. Like, if this was something that wasn't working, or if it wasn't something that the players were getting behind, or wasn't something that they actually felt comfortable with, like, they wouldn't have gotten anything from the last two games after what had happened in those first two games. That's why I think it's okay.
Imagine if the games were reversed. Imagine if game 3 and 4 were game 1 and 2, and game 1 and 2 were 3 and 4. Jesus, it'd be a long, long summer waiting for September to come around then.
It is true. Like, with Ireland, it's just the most recent feeling that matters, you know? And happily, I know it was another 1-1 draw, but it was such a good game, first of all. I mean,
it was actually a fantastic game.
It was fucking brilliant. This is still a bit of a novelty for Ireland to be involved in really good games, and it's happened frequently under Kenny. Like,
but like with this, and it's something, and I'll be honest, and I'll be writing something for the site later on about it, and it's more so after seeing some of the Scottish reaction. Like, I just think we all need to have a small dose of little bit of cop on and realise where we're at, and like Scotland, like some of the Scottish reaction to getting beaten by Ireland and what they were saying about their team. Like, that it's a disgrace and all the rest of it, and like all this kind of stuff. I think you guys had to realise that, like, you're gonna have moments. Like, this is a Scotland team before that who have gone 8 games unbeaten, had been to a Euros before that and done reasonably well, had been to a World Cup playoff or whatever, and yet they have one bad performance, really bad performance, granted, and get beaten. But like, even with Ireland as well, like, it's definitely needs to be that balance where, like, there's still gonna be times where the players don't turn up, and that's naturally because the nature of where these players are at. Like, they're just not capable of maintaining that level of consistency. And like what Shane was saying there earlier about Josh Cullen, says when he drops, his level maybe doesn't drop below a certain point, but that's only maybe what certain top players can do or whatever, where they always stay at a level, whereas players like Ireland there's gonna be those serious bumps in the road. Like, you can't just forget what happened in those first two games. But I do think Kenny, it does look as if he rectified it in terms of the system against Armenia and how he set up. It was wrong, incorrect, clearly. Like, even though he did create chances in the first half, but just wilted totally. And again, same against Ukraine. But even just like, I think you can get excited. You can be excited and delighted and all the rest of it, boy, when you see him almost like Nathan Collins and all the rest of it. But I just think Ireland fans and media and all the rest, we're just going to have to accept that there's going to be at times a shit show of a game. There's going to be stuff that's going to happen, and I don't think it means, right, that everything that's happened before is a disaster now and you have to rip it all up. Like, Scottish fellas are talking about sacking Steve Clark. Like, they go into Armenia, I know Armenia ended up getting a man sent off and all the rest of it, but he won comfortably. Like, some of the absolute, and I'm being guilty of it as well, but like, some of the absolute shite that gets written, like, and we all fall into the trap of, you just need to maintain a level, a little bit of semblance of balance, of saying, well, like, do you enjoy watching what's happening a little bit? Yeah. And then granted, if over time that can't bring the results, but then by the nature of top level sport, then that's when there'll be consequences. But at the moment, just have a bit of an even keel with it, because it just hasn't been like that. And it's only when I saw that some of the stuff reaction even from Scotland, and I'm thinking, granted, they're able to, they can look at George Ireland from a perspective of saying, was it one of the lines was Troy Parrott of MK Don's fame, but then in the next sentence he's annoyed that he ran off a fella called Jack Hendry and Tony Ralston, and you're like, lads, who the fuck are these? Do you know what I mean? Like, but that's how we all view our own players, as if you kind of expect more, and that's fair enough, you want to expect more of them and all, but like, there was absolutely like no irony in that paragraph from that Scottish journalist saying Troy Parrott of MK Don's fame, and then talking about that you ran off Jack Hendry and Tony Ralston. You're like you've just, and but I think we're kind of guilty of that, maybe a little bit, maybe of expecting too much. It's only natural when you see them, and it's your country and it's your team, but it's definitely something. Just trying to, I think I said that at the very ages ago, but not getting too hyped about young players, but it's just trying to find a little bit of a semblance of balance about the discussion around everything, because it does swing too wildly.
Yeah, really, now what I would say, I agree with pretty much all that. What I would say on the expectation is, I mean, the expectation for this Nations League group was set by the manager. Like, he unprompted said the target was to win the group and before the draw. 4 points out of four games, a pretty disappointing haul in the grand scheme of things. It means that Ireland won't be top in this group, and you know, it makes it trickier to get to the Euros, which is the ultimate ambition. But let's take a look at the four games as a whole. You both picked out a couple of positives and a couple of negatives, haven't reflected on it all. So Shane, now these positives, we might have touched on them already, but maybe pick your first positive on the list.
Can I go with the most obvious one first? Like, Dara O'Shea has, my God, or sorry, Nathan Collins has, my God, he's, like, I think we all knew, you know, there was the makings of a really, really good player, but it's probably a little bit of a Freudian slip with me in that, even the fact that I said Dara O'Shea first, to me, you know, Dara O'Shea and Nathan Collins, which is the better player here? Two players, you know, similar in terms of potential and how they could possibly kick on and try and become important players for Ireland. But I mean, Nathan Collins, like, what a, I mean, even before last night, he'd had a really kind of good kind of campaign, so he had across the games. Obviously last night he was exceptional. The only little question mark probably it raises is his repositioning last night, and the fact that he was at his absolute best in the middle of those three, and what knock-on effects does that have for the shape of our three now, and obviously particularly for Duffy. But he's just such an accomplished player. He really, really is, and it's hard not to get excited about, you know, what lies in front of him, because he ticked absolutely every box last night. That was one of the best individual performances I've seen. And as I say, like, if you remove Nathan Collins' goal last night, Nathan Collins is still absolutely getting man of the match in that game. Absolutely getting man of the match in that game. The highest pass completion rate in the field, 97%. Just
was it?
Yeah. 97%, one misplaced pass, one blemish on his copybook, unfortunately for him. But yeah, look, it's the obvious one, but it's the one that I just, you kind of have to, you can't. It's the elephant in the room if you don't throw it out there from the start, you know.
Does he keep Duffy out of the team now?
Oh, I'm a big Shane Duffy fan, I really am. I you know, he brings a lot to that side in terms of leadership, in terms of set
goals.
Pieces, obviously goals, set pieces, the whole lot. I would probably go back to Collins, Duffy, Egan, I think.
Oh, so you put your first choice team, you put Collins to the right of the three and get Duffy into the team in the middle still.
I think so. But again, everything is going to be so dependent on kind of game time and minutes between now and the next game it is. But at the moment, I think, yeah, I would still have Duffy in there. I would still have Duffy in there. But that might only be till the end of this year. You know, I think Collins is absolutely the long-term option in that position, no doubt.
David, your first positive.
First positive, another way of playing, another change and another option there, which is obviously mentioned with the midfield, and then even within with that, I'd say for Alan Brown as well. I think Alan Brown has kind of shown himself capable of filling into that role and done really well. Made a couple of really good runs, but especially last night, but even against Scotland, kind of now what you expect, isn't it? And is it an inverted winger or inverted fullback, where they kind of drop into the midfield and provide that extra body? And I think because he is naturally a midfielder, I think he'd be well capable of that, and he'd actually have, again, we talk about anticipation and all the rest of it. He, like for the Scotland goal, he kind of read where the ball was breaking and got in for that tackle and got into the mix and kind of started that melee a little bit. But I think a positive for him has definitely been for him in terms of just another little string to the bow. We've kind of said this for the last week or so, of that's what this Ireland team needs, is granted, yeah, knowing a way of playing and all the rest of it and what their jobs are, but being capable of having different strings to their bow and being able to mix it up. And I think Brown has been a positive over the last two games for sure.
Shane, bring us back on an even keel. Give us a negative.
Jesus, I'm struggling off the top of my head. Callum Robinson, yeah. Callum Robinson, look, he's, you know, as I say, he was just so pivotal for us last year. You know, I remember doing the tactical analysis pieces and writing at times that he just seemed to be, in terms particularly of game intelligence, seemed to be operating on a different level than the other players. I know Gareth Bale will argue otherwise, and his performances have shown otherwise, but it is impossible, Gavin, to my mind, it is impossible to go from not playing regularly with your club and being a bit part player with your club to turning up at international level and continuing to perform at an extremely, extremely high standard. And that's been the case with Callum Robinson, without a doubt. And I think, you know, it's brilliant that we have so many options in that final third, but we need him to reignite himself and become the force again for us that he was last year.
David, give us another positive. Sorry, no, negative.
A negative.
Yeah, sorry. We need to maintain the balance.
Yeah, sorry. Was I talking shite with that?
No, no. I completely agree with you. So.
Okay. Thank you, Gaff. Shane's gone quiet there, but it was disappointing that obviously we couldn't see more of Obafemi last night. In terms of, it would have been great, because like that's one of the major positives again at the whole camp of this win. That was just, I suppose, his emergence. I still have got that, like, well, I'm tying it in with that. I still have that little doubt, maybe sometimes, of an Armenia. Maybe it was just we got the shape wrong and the system wrong, and that's maybe why it happened. But it's like what I was saying before. I still think those kind of frustrating days to come where it could be difficult to break down. But maybe if there's so many ways now scoring, how it looks that way in terms of being able to create. Hopefully the last two games are a kind of platform for making sure what happened in the previous two games doesn't happen as much. I still think there'll be times when it will happen. I mean, that's why I was going off a little bit earlier, saying sometimes you just have to accept that it's going to happen, where we're not able to break down teams. That's still a bit of a nagging thing in my head, even though it's been great the last couple of games. That's still a nagging thing, where a little bit of that lack of creativity, more so from midfield rather than in attack a little bit, that could be, I think it is still an issue, and will be something that could be a bit of an Achilles heel.
Give us something to be positive about, Shane.
The depth in options. It's a follow through from David's point about the change in shape. I think now the amount of options that we've got in the various different positions. So you've had, you know, you would have started there with Seamus Coleman, Shane Duffy and John Egan as your three centre halves. You've ended up with Dara Lennon, Nathan Collins and Darragh O'Shea as your three. In the middle of the field, you had the situation last night, obviously, where the two lads come on at night and Malumbi come off. Up top, you've got now a situation again where, as I say, it's probably Troy Parrott / Callum Robinson playing alongside, you know, Ogbene / Obafemi. Adam Ida still to come back into that. That's serious amount, a really, really fantastic amount of options down through the middle of it. I think, you know, I think one of our listeners kind of had the question about the left wing back area. I'd agree with him. It's the one where maybe there isn't quite as much strength and depth. Obviously, we're fairly well covered in the goal. And Alan Brown's emergence to be a rival for Matt Doherty, or maybe backup for Matt Doherty, maybe is a little bit of a better word. I don't think he's quite a rival for him as well as he did. Means that you could write down, put it this way, an A versus B. I'd like to see a good training game between, you know, two Irish sides there at the moment, because I think we have two really, really good players now for pretty much most positions, maybe with the exception again of Josh Cullen. I'm not sure who we have who's capable of playing Josh Cullen's role to the level that he plays it. But that aside, I think there's not a whole lot of difference between option A and option B in pretty much every other position.
What about you, David? Another positive from you?
I think that's pretty much covered in terms of from this window. Like, that's, so one positive is that we're kind of not talking about a relegation battle. I don't think that from the Nations, which let's be honest, after the first two games, that's where it was heading. So that positive in terms of just being out, like, again, just being able to turn, it around and have a strong finish when the easiest thing in the world could have been for the timing, of these games. Well, could it have been for things to disintegrate even further a little bit, maybe after those first two? So yeah, I'd say that.
Mm. We are slightly tight for time because I have to run to the airport in Łódź and get home. So we won't have time to get into the European draws for the League of Ireland clubs. We'll do that next week. We also didn't get to chat about the Bose jersey designed by producer of this show, Kevin Brannigan. But we will get into that again. But I do want to briefly mention the under-21s. 4-1 loss to Italy in Ascoli means they'll go to the playoffs. I mean, they have taken the playoffs at the start of the group. They definitely have taken the playoffs, I would imagine, even at the start of this window. I didn't see all this game because I had to go out to the stadium to go to the senior match, but the sense I got from it, David, was a team that they were outclassed but were also kind of architects of their own downfall with the goals they conceded.
Yeah, nail on the head. What was I saying about balance earlier? I thought Ireland would win 2-1 just by getting giddy over previous results, so that just shows what a sap I am. But like, that was the most frustrating thing about watching was, like, Italy, I don't think Italy were actually really good, but they just were gifted goals. Like the penalty to give away was very silly. Mark should have done better at all with the shot, but I think there was some debate. Maybe he might have been carrying a knock because he'd gone down a few minutes before that. But I'll be honest, I kind of felt as if he was doing that just to get a bit of a water break in for some of the players, because I don't think it was quite hot enough for him to get one that was like factored in by UEFA. But I think some of the players just needed it. But it was the third goal right after half time was just a shambles of a goal to give away, really. That was really disappointing, really. Like, if just the manner of how it was, because Italy didn't need a helping hand either, because like, they're a really good side. But yeah, so hopefully they're able to pick themselves up for the playoff and do it over two legs, and fingers crossed as well, and Talla to be a decent crowd for it as well, because like, they've been really good over the course of the whole campaign. It was a disappointing way for it to finish in the group, but at least it's still a playoff to look forward to for them.
Shane, I've got the team sheet from last night in front of me from the senior match. I'm looking at Troy Parrott, Nathan Collins, Jason Knight. Who else have we got here? I think that's all from last night. Who are still eligible for the under-21s. Big playoff in September to get to a tournament for the first time at that level. Would you send them back to the 21s for that game?
I was wondering that myself last night. Yeah, I was trying to figure out what way will this play out. And dates-wise, Gav, I haven't looked. I assume they're around the same time as the senior games, are they?
Yeah, it's the same window, so it would be an either-or.
Yeah. I think I probably would drop them.
You'd send them back to the 21s?
I'd love to see the 21s in a major tournament. I really, really would. I don't know. Is that a stupid thing to say? I'm not sure. I would love to see the 21s in a major tournament, and I think putting them back would not quite assure it, but obviously it massively increases your chances of getting there, which would be, I mean, you talk about building going forward, and therefore do you not just leave the young fellas with the seniors, because, you know, they're what we're trying to build going forward. But how advantageous would it be for players and their development going forward to participate at a major tournament? Now, I'm not saying you leave those players then there for the major tournament, but if their participation in those games could ensure we're into a major tournament and that all the others get to experience that, I think there's a lot to be said for it. I don't think it'll happen, though. No, it probably won't.
Shane, there. Crawford has kind of said that as well, that these players deserve to be the ones who try and get Ireland there.
Which is understandable, and too, yeah.
I also think the senior team would lose both the games in September if all the under-21s had to go back to... went back to 21s. I actually think they're becoming more and more reliant on them with every passing window, I have to say.
Yeah, no, you're right. That's a no-brainer. We'd be massively weakened. And look, we need to go particularly, well, both games, I suppose. You know, we do, obviously, we're not going to jump that far ahead, but we do need a decent showing again when September comes back around from our senior team. I don't know, Gav. It's I don't have the answer to that one, though.
Well, I think that's a good note on which to end things. Absolutely no resolution whatsoever.
Shane not having a clue.
David and Shane, thank you very much. So we did a lot of extra podcasts around these international windows, and especially the first half of it was a an unbelievable slog. So thanks very much for so much work. And listener, thanks so much for listening to the show and supporting what we do at the 42. We're back in the regular schedule, back next Tuesday. If you get any questions, etc., get them in via the channels you'll see in the episode description of the podcast. We're back then, and until then, take it easy.